We're talking about working with underserved students. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. What questions do you have about college readiness programs? Did you receive mentoring as a middle school or high school student? How did that experience help prepare you for college? Did you have a mentor who made all the difference in your life? Join in this conversation at 800-642-1234. So for the past decade, Kang Ming-he has worked to advocate for Hmong students and create opportunities for students interested in Hmong studies to search for their roots and find their cultural identity. And he receives the Governor's Service Award today as an AmeriCorps Alumnus of the Year, recognizing his work on college readiness programs and recognizing his advocacy for students of color at UW-Eau Claire. Kang, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you.
So you are being recognized partially because of your work for UW-Eau Claire's college readiness programs. How did you get started with that work? Where did it start?
It started when I came into my undergrad year, my first year in college as undergrad, and I was introduced to a program called Bilingual Beginnings, where it served underrepresented students. And I went into it because I needed a job as a freshman, so I just applied. Went into it as like, I'm just going to get paid, sure, it's going to be fun. But while working through that, you know, and really understanding the program and what it stands for and its mission and goal and vision, it really resonated with me as a student of color. You know, the mission of wanting to give back to the community, wanting to support the local community who were underrepresented, who didn't see college as an option. So it really resonated with me growing up and not having a mentor and really not seeing college as a possibility. So then I really connected with the program and I took it in more than just a job. It became more like a, you know, passion. And then the team that I worked with became like a family. And we just connected so well and everyone there was driven by the same goal and passion. So that's kind of how I got involved with the program.
What challenges did you face as a college student that you wish middle school students or high school students had prepared you for?
For me, I was a first-generation student in college, and I think just understanding what college was and what the steps are, and I think that's what the mission of our program for Bilingual Beginnings is to really explore, give these children the opportunity to explore college and the options and the steps, and how do I pay for college? How do I apply? You know, where can I go? How far? And all that simple question that, you know, usually typical majority students will understand. That's something that I didn't understand as, I guess, growing up as a child, as a kid. So that's something that I think middle school and high school students need to know, and it's important for them.
Let's talk about your life as a kid. You came to this country at age 3, is that right?
Yeah, yep. I was born in the refugee camp in Phnom Penh in Thailand. And then when I was around 3, my parents and we decided to come here through resettlement, and we landed in Appleton, Wisconsin.
What was that like growing up in those early years as a child in a new country?
It was challenging. You know, it was just really, you lived every day, you just went and did your thing. There wasn't any goal or vision. You didn't know what was the outcome of, you know, going to school or anything. You just knew that you had to go because it's a requirement. There wasn't like a goal at the end where, you know, I'm going to go finish high school, go to college or anything. So it was really mainly just, you know, hanging out with friends, getting to know people, getting to know the community, you know, dealing with racial issue, you know, and you don't know how to express that. So it's really just trying to figure and navigate the system, but not having the tools or the language to do so. So at the same time, you know, if you wanted to succeed, you had to struggle and find the pathway yourself.
And you had to deal with those differences in your community. You were different. You were an outsider. How did you work through those issues?
I think it was, you know, a lot of the community base, you know, the Hmong people, they're a collective group and they're a community group. So for me, it was a lot of my cousins, my family members and friends who supported me, you know, who, you know, reinforced my identity, who I was, and who really were my role models at that time, because we didn't have any role models who were lawyers or police officers or anything. Our role models were just our older siblings. And they were, you know, working in companies and everything. So although they weren't, like, high achieving, you know, they were still really good role models because they were, you know, the people that we can look up to. They paved the path for us to go and get this education because they didn't go get their education so they can pave the path for us through financial issue and need.
Do you think you found a greater sense of community within the Hmong community? Is it tight-knit?
It's really tight-knit, the Hmong community, and I think, you know, we really support each other. You know, in the Hmong community, we love each other, and there's always a saying that, you know, in Hmong it says, Hmong chi lung Hmong te lung Hmong na. It means if, you know, the Hmong people aren't going to love themselves, who's going to love them? So the community itself is really tight-knitted, and, you know, our family is really family-orientated, and everyone supports everybody.
Where do you see a need for more resources to help disadvantaged, underprivileged students access college? Where could we put more resources?
Based on my experience, you know, I think a lot of resources can go more into helping underrepresented students get better access to equipment, such as, you know, technology and everything, because that's a big thing that's going on nowadays. A lot of kids we serve, they don't have the computers at home or access to Wi-Fi or anything. So when they go home, they can't really complete their homework. And, you know, their parents are working full-time or second shift, so they don't have access, you know, to go to the library or anything either. Or they're babysitting their younger siblings at home. So getting them that equipment or those materials so they can get their assignments and everything done, and so they're not falling behind as well. I think that's a big need, I think, for underrepresented students that we serve, that I think should go into.
Are students who receive mentoring in middle school or high school, are they more likely to succeed in college? What do we see there?
I think majority of the students that we have mentors definitely have gone off to college. One of my really first mentee that I mentor, he's actually a junior in college right now. He's attending Eau Claire as well. So everywhere I go, I see all my mentees that I have mentors, and they're always like, hey, Colin, how's it going? You know, I'm here now. And always telling me their story, and I'm really happy and excited to hear about it, you know, because when you mentor, I think when we mentor, it's not about here's my goals and someday you're going to reach it. It's just, you know, I'm here to help you, and someday you're going to do something great. And to see them, you know, eventually come up and grow and pursue their dream and come back and see you in a few years and said, hey, I'm doing this now. It was because, you know, your advice, or because just seeing you there, it really motivated me. And I think that's the piece of mentoring that we forget is, you know, just having someone there who just says hi to you every day or who just smile at you. That's mentoring, and that motivates the student to go so far.
We're talking with Kong Ming Her. He is receiving an AmeriCorps Service Award from Governor Evers today for his work on college readiness programs and his advocacy for students of color at UW-Eau Claire. What resources do you think are needed to help disadvantaged students get into college and then succeed? What questions do you have about college readiness programs? Are you attending a program this summer ahead of college? We're at 800-642-1234 to join the conversation. You can email ideas@wpr.org. Kong, who have been some of your mentors, either people who have helped you or people that you've looked up to? Describe them to us.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think along my journey, there's been a lot of mentors that came into it, but I think there's a few that really stick out to me. First of all, I think my biggest role model and mentor is my father. You know, going back to what I said earlier, not having a role model, you know, when we're kids and growing up and looking up to just our family members, I think my dad, he really put an emphasis on education and how important it was, especially in the United States here, to get one, and how someday it's going to benefit us. And, you know, I didn't really understand that until my early years in college. And when I decided to get into this work of, you know, supporting students in advocacy, my dad was really there, you know, always supporting me and saying, hey, make sure you do this. You know, this is how you should talk to some of the community members. This is how you communicate with the kids. You know, don't give up your education, even though, you know, we don't have the funding right now. Just keep going. And even when I did my capstone project and my final thesis project, he helped, you know, me do my research. And we went to Thailand together. He introduced me to the community there, and he really helped me through all that. And so I think he's my biggest believer, and I'm also his biggest fan. Mm. One of the mentors that I had in my life is, you know, my current friend and supervisor right now is Jody Testenreiter. I think coming into the pre-college program, Blue Beginning, she's always believed in me and always pushed me to do more. And sometimes it can get overwhelming because, you know, she's expecting a lot. But I know she's expecting it because she knows I can do it. And, you know, it's setting a standard so I can see it because, you know, I never set myself to the standards before. So she really pushed me along and really gave me the time and support and mentorship to come along today and to be in this role and to give back to my community. Another big mentor, the last one here I can think is my advisor and mentor is Dr. Joe Orser. He is now in Florida. He just moved there for a new job. But I think he really understood the struggle that I went through as an undergrad student, as a graduate student. You know, he understood, you know, that I was a family person. He understood that my community needed me. So the weekends that, you know, I was super busy and I couldn't, you know, make it on time for class or anything where, you know, I was struggling, falling behind. Mm-hmm. He was always like, it's okay. You know, I understand. And then he came up to me and said, you need to do research. This is what you need to do. You know, I believe you. Did you want to do it? And I'm like, yes, you know. So. Mm.
The UW system has been talking for a long time about achievement gaps with graduation rates and the numbers for African-American students. They have been improving, but are still, they lag big time. What do you think can be done to help close achievement gaps?
I think the biggest thing we're seeing right now for underrepresented students in college is the financial piece, is not having that. And with the university not being able to provide students with that piece, you know, it's widening the gap, you know, because mm-hmm. these students are coming to college, they don't have a whole bunch of financial behind them. And so when they come to college and we help them and we help them sit down, we go over the financial aid package with them, they have to take out a ton of loans. Or they have to work, like, you know, 40-plus hours a week while being full-time students as well. And that doesn't just
That help doesn't
anyone.
Set you up for success,
exactly.
is what you're saying.
Yes.
Talking with Kong Ming Her, who will receive an AmeriCorps Service Award today. Looking at college readiness programs, your thoughts, 800-642-1234. Have you faced problems in schools or colleges? Have you been through a college readiness program? Let's talk about it after... in just a minute here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about college readiness and working with underprivileged students. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. What resources do you think are needed to help disadvantaged students get into college and then succeed? Are you a teen thinking about college? What questions do you have about applying or the college experience? Do you think it would be helpful to have a mentor from a nearby university? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. We're talking with Kong Ming Her, who later today will receive an AmeriCorps Service Award from Governor Evers. We're talking about his path in life and how it led to work on college readiness programs, to advocate for students of color at UW-Eau Claire, and to be very involved in our state's Hmong community. So, Kong, a few years ago, you helped organize this 40th anniversary celebration of the Hmong people in Eau Claire. Why did you think organizing that event was important?
You know, I think just the name itself, 40th year, is it's a big thing for the Hmong community, you know, for being here in the United States for 40th year now. And at that time, I just recently came back from my research and started about a trip from China and Thailand, and really understood more of, you know, my community and who we are, and really that you know, yearning for, you know, the identity and making sense of who we are. And I think when the 40th year anniversary went on, Minnesota was doing one, Milwaukee was doing one, Madison was doing one. I was like, you know, there's a population in Eau Claire, and Eau Claire is such a great place that everyone should at least go visit there, be there. And so I gather, you know, my group of students, and I said, hey, everyone's doing it. We need to do it too, because it's who we are, and it's such a great time to celebrate. And we have parents here, elders who want us to do this, you know, who has been in the community for over 40 years and haven't seen anything like this. And so although we might not be as big as, you know, Minnesota or Milwaukee or Madison, we should do one in honor of our parents and our elders in the community. So that's what really drove me to push for this 40th year celebration.
What did it feel like when it happened?
It was a great feeling. The community members that came, they enjoyed it. You know, they said they'd never seen anything like that in Eau Claire before, to, you know, honor them. Besides the Hmong New Year and everything, those are celebrations, but this was really geared towards honoring who they were and the elders I talked to really enjoyed the event and were happy that the community was supporting who they were.
How are the dynamics of the Hmong community changing as families become second or third generation residents of Wisconsin?
Mm-hmm. I think that's, you know, there's two parts to it. It's changing. It's good for the student because they're, you know, grown up and, you know, the Western society now, understanding more of its culture, language, and so they're not falling behind as much and not struggling with it that much. But at the same time, they're also losing a little bit of their culture and history and language at the same time. So the students we're working with that are second and third generation, they're really questioning who they are now because they're like, oh, I don't speak my language, and, you know, I don't know who I am. Some of the students we talk to, they go, oh, I'm not Hmong. I'm just, you know, a white American. And so sometimes it gets really interesting. We get into this deep conversation about identity and who we are and, you know, the overlap between language and culture and how important language is and culture is to them. And I think for this younger generation, now they're in that searching stage where I want to search back and give back to my roots.
How do you help them search for that when they say to you, I'm not Hmong, I'm a white American? What do you say?
I think we really take the time to really not attack them or anything, but really educate them and talk to them about, you know, why do they feel that way and that their identity is kind of, you know, not lined up as how they see it. And, you know, just really explain to them that, you know, the great thing about this is you don't have to be either or, you're both. You know, you're a Hmong American, so you don't have to choose either side. And even if you don't see it that way right now, we're not going to, you know, attack you or anything. We're still going to support you because that's who we are as a, you know, as an elder, as a group here. And so we'll support you whatever identity or choices you make.
So last month, you received a master's degree. Congratulations.
Thank you.
In history from UW-Eau Claire. And I understand you plan to pursue a PhD. What part of history are you interested in exploring further?
So I did my master in, you know, the refugee experience from 1975 to 1993. And that was a really great topic for me because, like I mentioned in my thesis a little bit, every time when I go around to the family gathering, the elders, they always talk about the camps and the experience during that time and how they connect. And so that was a big thing that I felt that wasn't covered as much in the history book. So while doing that, I think my interest grew in understanding more about the culture itself and the tradition because that tie with the history. And then using that as well to kind of connect with Hmong around the globe, looking at the Hmong in China, the Hmong in Vietnam, and how their culture has shifted based on where they resettle and how that connects to the one here in the United States.
And so you went there and did some first-person interviews with people who, refugees who didn't come to the United States. What did you learn from them?
You know, I think the biggest thing I learned from them is sometimes it wasn't a choice, you know. It wasn't a choice as, you know, they didn't want to come, so they stayed. And they wanted to stay, but they had to come because of political reason. So, you know, it at that time, although they had agency, it wasn't all the way to what they wanted. And I think it's the Hmong there nowadays, it's, you know, they're growing and assimilating and acculturating the culture, Thai culture and everything, which is great. But I think a part of them is still, you know, destroy or still missing from the war and still want to connect with the Hmong from the United States here. And so I think that was the biggest thing when I went there and I saw the villager where they were really excited to see me and just, you know, understand that I was there to really listen to them and learn because I feel like we have such a huge disconnect that someday we're not going to know each other anymore.
You live in two different worlds.
Exactly, yes.
Immigration policy, a huge topic of debate these days. Have you seen in your studies that something that would inform this debate down the road?
You know, I think as of right now, I don't see anything that will reform that. I hope it will. There's still a lot of Hmong people that are refugees in Thailand that will still want to come here because they're family and connecting. I just don't know if we're on the right path for that. I wish we were, but I don't know if we are.
And later today, you are getting this AmeriCorps Service Award from Governor Evers. What is your reaction to being selected for that award?
You know, at first, it took me a while to really understand the award. I think for me, like I said to my wife at home, you know, I do things because I just want to give back, and I'm not expecting any rewards at that. And it's because it really matters to me, and I'm doing something. And I'm always telling her, do something out of your heart because you want to do it. Don't do it because you want something in return. That's not going to get you anywhere. And so it really took me a moment to really grasp on the award and what it meant and why it's so important to me. And I think, you know, for me, the award means a lot of things, but I think the biggest thing is it really acknowledged the support that my parents have given me, and you know, the struggle that they went through to, I guess, raise me this far along. And so this award is, you know, I'm accepting it, like you tell her, I'm accepting it not just for me, but for my parents, you know, for my older siblings who didn't finish school or who dropped out of school so they can work and support our family, and the younger siblings, you know, for my brother-in-law, for my sister, who were always there and always pushing me and always giving me that funding piece and always saying, hey, none of us made it, so you had to go and do it. So, you know, for my friends who really supported me. So I think really collecting my thoughts on the award, it's more than just for me. It's for my family and for my community to say, hey, we're taking a step in the right direction.
Leave us with the Hmong expression that says, we are all family who will be there for each other.
So, you know, among we have a proverb, we say, that means, you know, if you leave your door open, it's just one big village or community. But when you close your door, we're all just one family. So,
thank you so much for being
thank
here.
Thank you.
Kong Ming Her is the recipient of an AmeriCorps Service Award today for his work on college readiness programs and his advocacy for students of color at UW-Eau Claire. This is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network.